for us young leaders, I feel like the bar is so low for millennials that if you're just kind of good, you actually look great. And so, like, this is like the best opportunity to be serious about what God's called you to do as a millennial, because you'll get opportunity after opportunity, because there's not a lot of us. I joke, we're like unicorns.
Welcome to the Speak Your Success Podcast. Welcome to the Speak Your Success Podcast. I'm your host, TEDx speaker and best-selling author, Jonathan Jones. And today, yes, today is Feature Friday. We have a special guest in the studio. We're going to get to him in 1 second. But as we always do, as we always kick it off, we like to just show appreciation and show gratitude to the listeners, as those who leave those helpful Apple reviews. So we're going to go ahead and kick this episode off with a helpful review. And this was a 5-star review from Noelle Hendricks of the Two Awkward Millennials podcast. She entitled it Push for Greatness. This podcast is for those who are looking for that extra little push when life makes you feel like you're not good enough. Jonathan does a beautiful job of articulating motivational building blocks in a way that caters not only to millennials, but people of all ages. Noelle Hendricks, ma'am, we thank you for rocking with the Speak Your Success podcast, and we definitely appreciate the helpful review. But man, without further ado, I don't want to waste too much more time. But man, I'm excited. I'm glad. I'm elated to have you here in the studio with us today at Wolf Nation Studios. Wolf Nation Studios. Shout out to Dennis. Shout out to Kayla. But we have Mr. Grant Skeldon in the building. Grant, how are we doing, sir?
How are you, bro?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Grant, for the people who don't know much about you, how would you introduce yourself?
Lately, two things. I introduce myself as someone who helps leaders understand millennials, mm-hmm. and I am also someone who helps young leaders accelerate what they're doing to impact the city.
Dope, man. I love it. I was talking with one of my good friends. I'm not sure how long ago it was, but I was telling him that I think that you're probably the face of millennials. I said, for our country. I mean, this is really what
I am one of them, but it's one of the most diverse generations. So how could a Mexican South African represent us all? But I don't want to like give it. I don't want to downsize that. Like, God has given me a lot more of a voice, especially in the Christian circles. I would say for sure, representing like the Christian young millennial in the nation.
Yeah, man. Because I remember the first time I actually met you. Of course, I reached out very millennial like. It was at like a Champions breakfast at the ballpark in Arlington Stadium, and there was a lot of leaders. You might not even remember.
I do remember that. Yeah, when the Rangers wanted to know how to get young people to go watch baseball.
Oh, yeah. That was the reason.
That was a fun – dude, I don't like baseball. I think it's boring. So they were trying to – I wrote about that in the book, actually. Like,
oh,
about
really?
How I – it's a boring, slow sport. But they did something very unique. We can get into it later. But they did a good job in hearing us in that meeting. But yeah, I remember that meeting.
Yeah, man, because I remember you stood up and said something about that, about like how you was like, yeah, I don't see many people getting into baseball. But then and I was like, hey, where do I know that? Well, I didn't even know you then. I didn't know you from Adam then. But then I hopped on Twitter and I followed you. I shot you a DM. I was like, hey, man, da 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 da. And then that's how we got connected, and you know the rest is history. But man, Grant, so you have now you're a new author.
Yeah, and man. November 6th, I will be an official author.
November the 6th, man. And the title of the book, you want me to say the title? You?
I can say it because I know the subtitle. It's a long one.
Go ahead.
So the title of the book is The Passion Generation, referring to millennials, and then the subtitle is The Seemingly Reckless, Definitely Disruptive, But Far From Hopeless Millennials.
Nice, man. The passion. How'd you come up with that? The passion generation.
There's a big chapter 3 of the book actually talks about the tension between generations before us and our generation. And I feel like the generations before us were more of a provisional mindset where they had to do whatever is necessary to provide for a better life for themselves and for their kids, especially our grandparents. So they kind of complain about our work ethic because they will be like, hey, when I was young, it didn't matter what the boss said. I just did what they said. Or it didn't matter about what I did or my purpose. It was I needed to put food on the table. And that's true. And I give them a lot of props for that. But I do think because they have served so faithfully they also stayed at jobs they didn't like for a lot longer.
Very true.
Way longer than we ever do have. Like we mentioned before, average millennial will have 14 jobs by the time they're 40 if they keep the trajectory that they're on. Not dead, just by 40. And so there's a lot of job hopping because we're looking for a job that fulfills our passion or our purpose. And so I felt like our desire to have a job that fulfilled our passion was kind of at odds or tension with a generation that's raising us that's looking for us to get a major and or a job that fulfills provision. But I would say that because they have provided so much of a better life for their kids and now even for us, we have the luxury and the privilege because of our parents and grandparents to maybe even decide more than just provision, but also purpose and passion, making us more of a passion generation.
Yeah, man, I definitely love that because I think that's one thing that I've realized by coming into my passion within the past couple of years. Because like you said, the 14 jobs, I've had jobs, and it started out great. I was excited. I was like, yeah, I'm glad to be here. And then something started wearing off. I had the discount at the local department store, and then that wasn't enough.
Yeah.
And so, you know, by being able to identify this passion that you're speaking of, I think that's really great just for helping bridge the gap. But even beyond that, you know, helping people live a more fulfilled life, if you would say.
Yeah. And I wouldn't say that it is either or. Like, although I pitted passion and purpose against provision, I think if the pendulum was far to the left towards provision for our parents, or especially our grandparents' generation, is the kind of people that say, oh, I had to walk like uphill 3 miles every day to go to school, and I worked 2 jobs my entire life. Like, and they did, like, but they're over there. We kind of switched far pendulum to the passion and purpose, but you can't do like one without the other. No one gets to do the job that they're passionate about and feel purpose for in the very, like, that's their first job. I worked at, I don't know, you said department store. For me, my very first job at the time was my favorite store, was Marshall's.
Oh, nice.
But that quickly didn't become my passion. Mm-hmm. So I just would say, you know, and maybe because of, I think definitely because of social media, we can see people doing things at a younger age maybe than normal, and we want to do what, oh, they're doing their passion and their purpose. Maybe even sometimes people are doing their passion and purpose, not getting paid at all to do it.
That's true.
And like living on like one check away from maybe not being homeless, but having to find a different job. Or they're working some jobs they never tell you that they're working in order to do what they're doing. And so I guess my point is that it's not either or. You have to provide. I just think because parents are so strong on that provision mindset. For me, I always ask, how often do your parents call about how much money you make, your jobs, not getting paid enough, not providing enough, not being at the stage financially that they would hope for you to be? And for me, my dad's an accountant, so he's always concerned about the money. But if they would also ask questions about passion and purpose, we may see, oh, you care about my passion. Now you also care about what do I need to do in order to provide for that passion.
Mm, okay, so all this talk about passion. When did you identify what your passion was, or what your purpose was?
Passion was I. This is a real godly answer, but it is pretty true. I don't know if because I don't know if millennials are actually my passion. I actually don't think they are. I know that sounds terrible for a guy writing a book on millennials, but I don't know, doing what God's called me to do is really a passion of mine because it's just better. It's just easier. I see him show up in very unique ways. And he opened the door towards doing the millennial thing, and I see how much it helps the church. But there's a lot of times I don't want to talk about millennials, like, because that's not always my passion. There's a lot of other things that I think people would be surprised by that is my passion. However, my passion is, there's a guy named Henry Blackaby, an old school dude, that said, if you want to know God's will, just go where God is already moving. And so just join him. Every person can do that, where they see, man, God tends to be, he shows up a lot whenever I get involved in X, Y, or Z. Like, I'm gifted in X, Y, or Z. So I think as you grow and as you're faithful to go where God's already moving, then the platform and the position and the status and the opportunities get bigger. But a lot of people, they go where they want to be moving, and they go where they want to be, what they want to be doing. And so I just saw God moving a lot when I was about 4 or 5 years ago, 5 years ago in the area of millennials. When I started getting asked a lot of questions, because I was a millennial, mm-hmm. about millennials, I just realized, like, from day one of speaking about it, I just kept getting asked to share on it. And I kept then seeing what the content I was giving being helpful. And so I was like, okay, gotcha. I'll start focusing and observing on this more. But I definitely don't want to be the millennial guy. Someone joked with me yesterday, is like, Grant, do you see yourself being the millennial guy forever? I was like, no. Like, why? Who? If I was the millennial guy in like 20 years, even that, let alone when I'm like 70, 80 years old, that would be a joke. Like, let me tell you about the millennials back in my day. We used to talk about millennials. No one's gonna care about that.
Because yeah, we'll see. Be a couple different generations. Okay, so with
my point is, go where God's already moving. Be passionate about that, and God will open very unique doors. And that would be way worth you trying to shove open your own doors, which is exhausting.
Okay, so what about the student, or what about the individual who says, well, I'm going to go to college because my parents want me to go to college, and I'm going to go to college because college is what was next. Like, what's your thoughts on that? Because I know for me, I went to college because college is what was next. I didn't necessarily have a heart to go to college, but it was what was next. So what,
man,
what would
and
you
I would say people, so one, you already know I'm so opinionated about college, but two, I would say people go to college because what's next. I would say people stay in college because they don't know what's next. Like, it's not even on the front end. On the back end, I see people like, I think I'm going to get a master's, or I think I'm going to get another bachelor's. Like, they want to stay because they don't know what's next. Like, I'm more lately frustrated with that. It's like, ooh, people using college. I'm like, dude, there's so much cheaper things to figure out time, like what you want to do with your life, than going into debt for college. I really struggle with college. But you asked, okay, I would advise young people you do not get to go to college. If I was your parent of a millennial, you don't even get to go to college until you know what you want to do, which I should have and hopefully guided you really well to know what you want to do before you go. Because I try to think of the different ages and stages of, like, if you were back there in the Great Depression, coming out of that, like, do you think they had the luxury to send people to college just because it was next? Like, if you said, hey, mom, dad, I don't know what I want to do, but I think I'll figure it out in college, I'm like, we don't have the money so that you can just figure it out in college. Like, until you know what you want to do.
Yeah.
Like, college to me is a means to get a job. But now people are using it just as like a stage of life, and they're not even working hard to figure out what they want to do to get the job. Like, they're just having, like, they see it as an experience more than a means to get a job. And so I really struggle with the way young people view college. And then they're like, I struggle with, I don't want to make this spiritual, like the enemy's using it, but like, I think the enemy's not trying to distract Christian millennials to do all these sinful things. He's just distracting us to like waste our time and just be decently somewhat effective, but like not really, and empty inside and comparing ourselves to everyone, and really ineffective in the end of the day. So for me, I really, really would not send someone to college unless they know what they want to do, but stop seeing it as an experience and start seeing it as, this is a launching pad to get a good job. Lastly, I think colleges have not done a great job lately to get people jobs. Ironically, they, I would say, have a better guarantee right now to get people in debt than to get them a job. That's not a good guarantee. Wow. And so it's just, one, millennials got to have a better posture towards college. It's not about fraternity sororities and all these clubs you can join. Community will come already if you just, I think, not put your head down and get the work done, but just, it's about an education to be the best at what you can be in a certain field you want to go into. And then two, I think colleges really need to wake up to, like, if you're not helping get us a job, then why are we doing this anymore? Because that's what it originally was for. And then I guess one more thing is that there are some jobs, many jobs, that you do not need to go to college for.
That's true.
Usually, if they revolve around technology, it's almost anti-helpful to go to college because they're teaching you stuff that is so behind. Like, marketing, social media marketing from college right now, especially 10 years ago or 5 years ago, you can learn more from YouTube on how to do YouTube than from college. And so, because technology has advanced so much in our generation, there's certain things that's like, this is why I stopped going to college. I was like, if 7 out of 10 young people are leaving the church, why would I want to learn a system that's clearly failing? And that'd be like me wanting to be a pilot, and I'm going to go to a college where you tell me, hey, well, 7 out of 10 of the pilots that go to our school, they have crashed and burned and died. But you got to get this degree. I'm like, dude, I want to live. I want to live. I do not want to die. And so something's got to change. I know that's harsh, but some occupations do not require college. Now, I will finish because I've said a lot. And I'm passionate about this.
Yeah, we're listening.
I am very serious about education, and I'm very serious about learning. I can't. I will like feel empty, or something will gnaw at me if I'm not constantly learning. And so I want to learn. That's why I think I'm so frustrated with this thing that's supposed to and has historically always helped people learn, seemingly not doing that. I've just seen a lot of people go to college and not seemingly learn a lot in the field that they want to go into. And I just wish colleges, especially Christian colleges, were like on the elite in the arena of being dynamic and just training up some of the most innovative, elite, dynamic cultural shifters in the world. And right now I kind of feel like they can sometimes become Christian bubbles and not get their young adult jobs.
Man, I mean, just listen at what you're saying, and we're talking about college and we're talking about learning and how people can learn differently. I've realized probably one of the most beneficial styles of learning for me has been mentorship, like going and meeting with somebody.
Yeah, that'll mess you up in a good way.
Oh, mentorship?
Yeah, no, it will. I mean, if you get mentored, that's always going to be better than listening to one guy talk to 50 people and not be able to answer questions too well, than to follow someone and see them that's doing it, that's successful. Another reason I struggle with college is that guys are like, hey, 20 years ago I was successful at this. But in our generation, you know how much has changed in 20 years? We need some current people. I'm not saying that guy's obsolete by any means. That guy's wise, legacy leader. I'm saying both and. But give us some people that are currently successful, because things – the models have changed, like technology has changed, the culture has changed.
Yeah.
And the game, so many, there's things that were big deal 10 years ago, and these companies are gone. Like just, we gotta come on, we gotta change.
That's so crazy. I mean, that's like Toys R Us, places you think they're gonna be around
Blockbuster,
forever.
Blockbuster, like, dude, there's things that aren't even, what is it, MoviePass is almost gone? That didn't even last, but 3 or 4 years.
Oh my goodness, okay. Okay, so Grant, man, tell us more about your book, man. Like, if there were like a couple of points, like a couple of nuggets you just wanted to just share, no pressure. But if there were like something that you were like, people need to get this book because of blank.
I mean, I'd say maybe if you know what you want to do, I would say this may be one of the best books you can get, because it will show you how to actively engage someone who could potentially mentor you or disciple you, or just I would say accelerate you in what you want to do. It is, I think, one of the most practical books on mentorship and discipleship, in the sense of, I mean, I've utilized the content for years now with 72, with the program that I lead in initiative, to help young leaders who are already actively pursuing their calling to then connect with those who are 10, 20 years ahead of them, which can save decades literally of pain and failure and lessons learned.
Okay. I think that's huge, because even going back to like mentorship, and because for instance, for me, like when I went through 72, and that was how I got connected with you, and then I participated in Vox. And after doing Vox, I saw that not only the coaches helped me, because I sat down with Bryant one day, and he walked me through some stuff. And from there, then I got connected with another coach, and now I'm speaking and getting paid to speak.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. But that's a success story. That's awesome.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful for you and the platform that you know you all created. You created with 72 and through Initiative. But I think that just people identifying what your passion is and what you want to do, I don't think that's enough. I think you have to be understanding that you have to put a level of work behind it.
Yeah.
I'm just curious to hear what would you have to say about that? Because I know I heard one of your presentations, and you told a guy that you wanted to be discipled by him, and then he was like, "All right, meet me here at 4 o'clock in the morning."
Yeah. Well, yeah. So I'd say you want to horizontally surround, and I think you're really, really good at this, is that you surround yourself with people that already know what they're called to do and are running in that lane. Like I feel like you surround yourself with other people that do similar things as you. And I think our generation is good at not seeing that as competition, but seeing that as people that can complement me and really raise my standard of excellence. And so I think our generation is actually decently good at surrounding ourselves. The go-getter types, if you will, are good at surrounding themselves with others their age that are doing it. And I even would say we are good at desiring to be around those that are successful at it. My advice has always been the same in the sense of I want to be the youngest in the room a lot. That's the world I want to be in. When I said it'll mess you up in a good way, when I start hanging out with people that are 20 years ahead of me, whether it's in maturity in life or if it's in excellence and success in the arena that God's called me in, then just their standards, like whether it's how much money they raise, how much people they impact, the level of maturity and character and integrity that they make their decisions, I'm like, dang, when I go back to hang out with my friends my age, I'm like, we're kids. I'm 28, but I'm like, what we're talking about and thinking about is so, I mean, what if I, at 28, could be thinking and living and disciplined like the dude that's 48? That will be a game changer and set me apart so much and give me more opportunity. Especially, I mean, for us young leaders, I feel like the bar is so low for millennials that if you're just kind of good, you actually look great. And so, like, this is like the best opportunity to be serious about what God's called you to do as a millennial, because you'll get opportunity after opportunity, because there's not a lot of us. I joke we're like unicorns. I would say the thing is those leaders will always tell you they're way too busy to mentor, disciple, invest in you, and that's true. And so that's why I say don't ask to meet with them, ask to follow them. Like, ask to how can you move your life around them and join their life, not just try to take some of their time.
All right, Grant, so we're talking a lot about leaders, and we're talking a lot about, like, what, you know, begins to happen when, I guess, an individual begins to get connected with people and community and get connected with individuals who are, I guess, taking the same strides or are in their same general vicinity. What do you have to say to the young leader who, I guess, the wind gets knocked out of their sails? Like, life hits them, and they're facing, like, really tough adversity. And they say, man, I feel like I just want to go through the motions in life at this point. I feel like I'm meant to do something, but I don't know what it is. Like, what would you say to that person?
Don't know what it is. They've been knocked down trying to figure it out, or trying to do what they feel like it is.
I'll say they've been knocked down trying to figure it out, but now they're just like, you know what? This is exhausting. I'm just gonna get a job. And I'm just going to do that.
Yeah. Well, one, I would say then be the freaking best at that job. Because I've had a lot of jobs that I didn't like, almost all of them, except for the one when I became my own boss. But I want to be the best. Like, when I worked at Marshall's, I worked really, really hard. Like, it might just be that I'm lucky that I just can't not want. It will bother me if I don't do a good job. Like, it will I'm like, I'm going to spend the same amount of time probably. Why would I want to do, like, mediocre if I could do better? Like, I just want to do that. That's going to then lead to, I just think doing really, really good job sets you apart, opens new doors, and gives a little more clarity to what the next thing is that God could have for you. It's really like the, can God trust you with the little things? Because then show you the big things. I mean, even my two favorite examples of this is David and Joseph, both young people. Both given vision at a young age for the big thing, but God didn't give it to him right away. He still trusted them with a lot of little things, like in a almost messed up way. Honestly, if I was David or Joseph, I feel like they somewhat rightfully could say to God, like, it's kind of messed up how you did this. Like, you showed me a vision of I'm going to be king, or you showed Joseph people are going to bow down to me, but you didn't mention it's going to take decades to get there. And you didn't mention that I'm still going to have to go back to being a shepherd after being anointed as a king. Yeah. Or Joseph, I'm going to go be in a pit, be betrayed. And then even when I get out, and I work so hard for Potiphar, and like he trusts me with everything, I'm still going to get betrayed again. And then I'm going to help. Like, it's a whole bunch of crap, honestly. But still, what they did do well is like not lose just that bar of excellence of I'm going to do, like, the way I see the work and how the Bible says is that we work unto the Lord. And so, like, I'm working for God, even if I don't like my boss, I'm working for him. Like, he's the one who sees all the things I do. And so, I don't know, being that kind of person has always led to, eventually, I see why he had me where he had me. And then two, he tends to open doors. And by the time he opens it, like when I started initiative, that when I said I got the job that I created, I was ready for I've been waiting almost for this opportunity. I didn't know where it was coming and when it was coming, but I know Movement Day, which I feel, yeah, you were there, the very first one that in Dallas. That was the first time I ever talked about millennials. I was working at Papado's at that time. And so, again, that was me doing the ministry I cared about. But no one, almost 5% of people that knew me knew I was actually working at Papado's, because I made no money from Breakdown Ministries, the organization I did for 4 years. And so by the time they asked me to talk about millennials, which I had never been asked to talk about, but because I was young and I was set apart from most because I did a better job than I feel like most young adults, they said, would you share? So, again, I don't know if they would have done that if I didn't work hard. And but when I did share, I had already felt like I had built up the ability to communicate. I feel like the integrity and character that I needed, because I was going to try to go in hard and like convict them. And then I instead got convicted 2 days before to go in humble and just ask for help. And then that launched to getting several speaking opportunities, which honestly people ask me all the time, how do I speak today? And I was like, I don't have an agent, and almost nobody comes from my website. It's just from word of mouth, which has all lead back to that one event in 2014, and then it's spiderwebs into a whole bunch. So every time I speak at something new, then there's new people that ask. But it all comes back to that one event, that one moment, which is very similar to Joseph. When he got his opportunity, it's like, we need to get this guy out of prison, and or for me, Papados, and we need to let this dude lead a little bit.
Man. Dang, that's crazy! I had no idea you worked at Papado's, and I had no idea that you had a ministry for 4 years before.
Yeah, most people don't know that I helped start a nonprofit with John Pendergrass.
Okay.
For 4 years, and that's what gave me all the relationships that I had with the churches and a love for the church. That's what gave me a lot of experience leading. That's what gave me a ton of connections whenever I needed to gather all those millennials. That I had a lot of experience and trust with churches. So that I was ready for that time.
Oh, wow. That's crazy how that comes together. Because I was talking with somebody this morning, because here and there I still Uber in the morning.
That's awesome.
Yes, yeah, I probably get up like at 5 and Uber maybe to like 10. But I do that while my speaking business is still preparing to flourish.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I was talking with a young lady this morning. I began to tell her, I was like, I believe that God doesn't waste any experiences. And I think you're definitely a testament of that, just what you said, based on the work that you did before. I just think of almost like architects, how in order for them to build up, first they have to dig deep holes into the ground.
That's good.
And then they secure things, and then they build up on top of it. So it's, you know, prepared for when hurricanes come, storms come, rains come, whatever.
Yeah.
They're already rooted and grounded so that they're prepared for whatever type of weather. But, man, I think that's super dope. That's really crazy. I really had no idea.
Yeah. I mean, it really is how people say, like, no. When I was, like, 18, I found a book in my closet. I guess my dad tried to read. It was 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership by John Maxwell. And I remember one of the quotes was, I don't know who said it, but he said, champions are not made in the ring. They're just found there. And I think what he was trying to say is, his point was, they are ready for that moment, and that champions are made in the gym, but they're found in the ring. And I kind of feel like that a lot of people don't realize, almost anyone that's like an overnight success, because it looked like in 2014 when Initiative launched, like, man, hundreds of young people, hundreds of different churches that they represent, like all this and that, and just speaking and this. I had been doing that, I guess, semi in the dark for a long time, because no one ever saw it that much compared to how much people see Initiative.
Yeah.
But it's not like I just was an overnight success and I just happened to be gifted. I had been doing stuff for 4 years, just no one was watching at that time.
Dang, yeah, that's super crazy. That's super crazy. But yeah, man, I mean, I want to get ready to wind this down, because I know you're a busy man, Grant. I know you have places to go, people to see, things to do. But Grant, so like, what? How do I want to word this? I was going to say, what else do you do? Even though I know, I was going to say, what else do you do? Just so like people know, just so people know what
yeah.
else you do.
I mean, yeah, of course, I guess author, which is crazy. And a lot of things I do is I try to get diverse leaders together, especially next gen leaders, and try to get them mentors. Everything I do with 72 for Dallas young adult leaders, I'm starting to do for leaders in the nation. So I've done like these retreats to get very influential Christian young leaders together, about 40 of them this year, to just create unity among next generation Christian leaders. Because I do think that it's going to be pretty difficult for our generation leading the church. There's a lot of pastors and leaders that are going to have to pass the baton soon out of necessity, not out of like a plan and structure of when the best time to pass the baton. And so I think we're going to get the baton late without much training, and we're going into a culture that may be the most anti-church or Christian culture in a while in America, probably ever in America.
Yikes.
And I think we're very under and ill-equipped, but that's why I think, and divided. And so that's why, more than anything, in this short window we have before that comes, I want to unite our leaders and train them up and accelerate them. Because the silver lining is whenever things are difficult and whenever things are dark, it forces us to rely on the Lord like never before. It forces us, crisis usually forces us to come together. And lastly, I think truth, just like light and darkness, shines the brightest. And so cultural Christianity, I think, in the next 10, 15 years will be a lot less of a thing. And it's very hard to share the gospel in cultural Christian culture because everyone's like, why go to church? This will be like, no, I'm not. Yeah, I'm definitely not a Christian. But great. Now we can actually talk about, we have a real conversation rather than play a game.
Wow. Okay. Man. Okay, so Grant, typically when I do the Friday episode, I always do like a quote of the week. And since you're on today, do you have like a favorite quote, or like is there a quote that's just burning in your mind that you're thinking about maybe now, I don't know, that you want to share?
Oh, man, I do have one that comes to mind, and it's in my wallet, but I don't have my wallet. And I'm going to try to remember it because I so should know it since it's in my wallet. But it's our greatest fear should not be failing. Our greatest fear should not be a failure. Our greatest fear should be of succeeding at things that don't really matter.
Oh, man.
Wow. I think that's a temptation. We all want to be like really good at stuff, but man, I'd be afraid of wasting my time doing stuff that doesn't matter.
Oh my goodness, dang, that's heavy. That's a heavy quote. I love that. I really love that. But Grant, so where can the good people find you, and where can the good people purchase your book?
Yeah, find me at Grant Skeldon. So Grant Skeldon with a K, and then it's a D, Skeldon. So at Grant Skeldon, grantskeldon.com, and the book is on Amazon. It's where all books are sold. But Amazon's like apparently where most people buy things these days.
Man, yeah, Amazon is killing it.
Dude, and another thing, I just watched a video on 2011, Gary Vee, talking about, I guess Amazon wasn't that big of a deal in 2011. It's not that long ago, not even a decade. And he was like, a lot of people are sleeping on Amazon. And as you watch it, it's so crazy to hear him talk about Amazon like it's not a big deal. And he's like, I really think y'all need to jump on this one. And it showed like if you put, I think $100, maybe it was $1,000 into Amazon back in 2011, you'd have $100,000 now. And just that, again, another place where culture and technology is totally changing the game. And so we gotta.
Goodness.
Got to get some of the new young blood to help, not to replace, just to be a part of the discussion.
Man, yeah. I mean, one of the biggest things for me, even though I know we're wrapping up, but it feels like we're ramping back up. But one of the biggest things for me is like how I've seen you talk about unity. And I think that's one of the biggest things because I was reading I heard Dr. Miles Monroe speak, and that he was saying that success is nothing without a successor. And he began to talk about Jesus. He said, you know, Jesus with his disciples, he said he invested in his disciples. He didn't invest in buildings. He didn't invest in churches. And like I've always heard you say, like how many miracles he actually did in the church versus when he was going out on mission. But it's like people, I don't not I don't understand, because I know it's a pride thing of not wanting to pour into somebody else and not wanting to help influence somebody else or raise up somebody else. But understanding that when you die, your legacy dies with you if that's how you operate.
Yeah.
So it's like, it sucks to see. And I mean, I saw when you spoke, and I saw it really broke your heart. Just understanding that there's so much opportunity for growth, there's so much opportunity for action. But if we don't take action regarding unity, then where is that going to leave us? Which is a scary place.
Yeah, I think for the generation before us, and even, I mean, I'm training my and preparing my heart for, I get the privilege, and we get the privilege of being like the young, edgy, new leader. Like, I was speaking at this Together event this Saturday, and it's about 50 to 100,000 people. It's the biggest crowd I've ever spoken in front of. But that's like crazy. 2 days before, they said, "Hey, we're changing it. You're not going to speak alone. You're going to have a guy on a panel with you, and it's this Z generation guy." And this dude was on fire, man. I'm like, dang, this kid. I'm like, he's talking about Z generation. I'm feeling old. So I'm just saying, like, why I say that, though, is I've been preparing my heart for Jesus was one of the greatest leaders in the sense of, and this was so help generations that are upset with millennials and or they want us to do what, I don't know, sometimes I struggle with, like, do you want us to do better than you? And then for us, I got to ask myself, do I want that kid to do better than me? And the more I'm about the kingdom, it's like, yes, because if he wins, God wins. If the generation before me wins, if I win, if we're on the same team, there's one team that wins, all of us. But my point is, Jesus could go and say, and he's the greatest leader, and say to the disciples, you guys will go and do greater things than me. And so that posture of, like, even Jesus is not saying, well, I got to be the best, but you guys go and do a little bit lower than me, but still keep my legacy going. It's like, you will do greater things. I think if you have an open hand leadership like that, where you actually want to create a platform for your followers to do better, you're just going to be a better leader, and you're going to create a foundation for an incredible legacy.
Man. Yeah, I mean that's definitely the way to go, but I think sometimes, like I said before, it can be that pride. It's like, no, but I want to be the best. But how long are you going to be the best? You can't be on top forever.
Yeah.
And even when you're on top, God gave you the gift. So imagine if God's hand was on you, and then you're like, you know what? Let me just take my hand back.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Scary
and
stuff.
And then you definitely crumble. We're going to get ready to get out of here. Grant Skeldon, I appreciate you,
Thank you, man,
for coming out, man. You're definitely that dude, Grant. You're definitely that dude. Everybody, successors, I want to really encourage you to, if you have not already placed your order, to go on Amazon right now and order The Passion Generation by Grant Skeldon. You have to go ahead and get it. You have to go ahead and get it. And without further ado, we're going to close it out like we always do. This is TEDx speaker and best-selling author Jonathan Jones hanging out with Grant Skeldon today, saying, speak your success, believe in your greatness, and continue to create the life and business of your dreams. Why would you want to live any other way?